the next comic book club, and you're your host, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Albert!
Hello! Hey, everybody, welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, James!
James!
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming to Comic Book Club tonight. We're very excited. This is our first show of 2009.
As you may have guessed, since it just started.
Right. Yeah.
We haven't had any underground secret shows, but.
We did. We had one, but. Yeah. I had one.
Yeah, you had a private.
Yeah, that's good. So, what did you guys do for the holidays? What was anything fun?
I got really drunk.
Cool. Comic book related? Anything?
Comic related. No.
Read comics once you were drunk. Yeah. I met a red version of myself.
Oh.
Huge douchebag. Huge jerk.
That's surprising.
Yeah, but he can take anybody.
Yeah, it's true.
Cool. I celebrated Hanukkah.
Oh, how'd that go?
It was with Kitty Pryde. The only Jewish character in comics.
That's not true.
Is it a coincidence that you're also in love with her? You're in love with her.
Yeah, well, that was my private show that I... We're going to start the
show. Yeah, that's a great idea.
I'm very excited about this. We have a great guest for you guys tonight. Let's welcome out, ladies and gentlemen, Peter David!
Yeah!
For my picture, Click Castle. Click Castle. Go to show in the venue. That show.
We actually brought the show. Speak to me, mortals! And I, listening from on high in my church, will listen to you and perhaps answer your questions and honor you with my presence.
All right. Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
I appreciate you being here.
We brought this couch, but that's cool too, man.
I shall accept this offering.
Jump! Oh!
I had no idea if that was going to work.
Wow.
I was scared.
Oh, man.
And then Peter David died.
Sorry about that, guys.
My parents never loved me.
Thank you so much for coming back to the show. We're very excited to have you here. So what's been going on with you? What have you
well, Jay.
Yes.
Yeah, you're a real Jay Leno.
Yeah. what?
Let's talk about some of your titles, I guess.
Besides gymnastics, yes. What have you been doing?
Well, let's see. Currently, I'm writing X-Factor, which, you know, we got some really nifty stuff coming up.
Yeah.
I do Fallen Angel for IDW. Sir Apropos of Nothing is a 5-issue limited series that's based upon a fantasy series of mine, although the comic book series itself is completely original stories. I write She-Hulk for the moment. I guess actually I wrote She-Hulk. That's been canceled.
Yeah.
I'm keeping myself amused.
Please elaborate.
I'm doing some issues of Wolverine First Class, which I gotta say I'm just having a blast with. I mean it's such an entertaining thing to write. It's set in its own little kind of continuity bubble, and I get to play with characters who I haven't done in a while or ever. I did a two-parter with Daredevil and Elektra, and I just finished writing one with Thor, which is a lot of fun, just doing all the classic these and thous and all that kind of stuff. hey, Wolverine, so really can't go wrong.
Let me ask you a question actually about Wolverine. How do you find a new story to tell about Wolverine at this point?
I think that, well, in terms of Wolverine First Class, the nice thing about it is that you're not really telling stories about Wolverine per se. You're telling stories about specific things that are of concern to younger readers, since Wolverine First Class is an all-age story. For instance, the story that I just finished with Wolverine and with Thor is really more about, Kitty trying to impress various, of these various girls that she knows.
Yeah, Kitty Pryde, right?
Kitty Pryde, yeah. Why, what did you think?
I don't know.
No, Kitty
You need
Pryde.
A couple moments in the back?
Later.
and what makes Wolverine such an effective character is his versatility. There's any number of...
He's just like Meryl Streep.
Yeah, he's got all the accents.
Yeah, he can
really
do it
fantastic.
All.
Is his versatility. There's all kinds of situations that you can put him in, and there's so many shadings to him that really, if you can't come up with stories, effective stories of Wolverine, you're really doing something wrong.
Cool. I'm sorry.
That's exactly you.
I tried to write some stories and it didn't work.
That's not the character's fault now, is it?
I blamed it on him.
To be honest, he fought your dialogue pretty hard.
He's the best there is at what he writes. Let's talk about X-Factor briefly.
Okay.
There was a story put up on Newsarama today.
Yes, yesterday.
Yesterday. Which basically you said, sorry, I'm not going to tell you anything about X-Factor because I can't.
Yeah, basically.
That's a big reaction to that.
Yeah, well, basically what happened was a guy wrote to me from Newsarama, and he said, look, I'd like to do an interview with you about what's coming up with X-Factor in 2009. And I thought about it, and I wrote back to him, and I said, look, here's the problem. The stuff that's coming up is so unexpected and is going to catch so many people off guard and is really going to rock people that if I try to, there's no way that I can tell you about it without ruining it. I mean, there's no way. Anything that I tell you will just cut away the surprise. I mean, the whole concept of X Factor and where I think, frankly, the book has been lacking, and, you know, I'm the one who's lacking it, was knocking people for a loop, doing the stuff that's unexpected, doing the kind of those X-Factor moments, the moments that you sit there and go, oh my God, I didn't see how this is coming, although it makes sense, but I didn't see it coming. And we haven't had enough of that. And, you know, mea culpa. So I've decided to, you know, fix that. And the problem becomes that if the very first thing I do is blow all the stuff we have coming up, I'm undercutting the very effect that I wanted to achieve. So I said, you know, look, so what I did was I wrote back to him and I said, look, I really can't do an interview about it, and here's why. And I gave him all the reasons, and he wrote back and he said, could I use this as an interview? And I went, oh, okay, sure, if you want. I don't really think it's much of an interview, it's just me saying no comment at length. Because, you know, I never use two words where 500 will do. And he said, okay, and he ran it, much to my surprise, and it caused all kinds of dispute among fans who seem to be split into three camps. Those who think I'm a total dick.
I wouldn't call them fans, to be fair.
Those who totally agree with me, and those who say, I don't agree with him, but I see his point. You know, I mean, the thing is that I think that some people thought that I was being disparaging of those fans who seek out spoilers or who like to write about everything that happened in a book. I wasn't. You know, I wasn't intending to be disparaging of them. All I was saying was that I, as the writer, intend for the story to be enjoyed in a certain way. And to my mind, the story cannot be enjoyed the way that I meant for it to be if you blow the key points for people.
Yeah.
The comparison that I used was, there was a play many years ago called Sleuth. And it said right in the program book, the authors of this play ask you, please do not tell anyone who has not seen Sleuth the details, the plot twists. Do not ruin it for other people because we want it to be enjoyed the way that we intended it to be. And I swear, people who read that kind of went, okay, you know, and believe me, I tried. Because I ran into people who had seen it. They wouldn't tell me squat.
Wow. It's a different generation there.
You wouldn't think so. I mean, I was part of that generation. You know, I'm still here.
Do you know what happened to Sleuth?
Yeah, I saw the movie.
Oh. I read the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I did that whole movie.
That was a theatrical show.
Yeah, really. But
that may or may not happen in Sleuth.
back in the 1950s, when Psycho came out, Alfred Hitchcock had the studio issue a strict warning that nobody would, and you can even see it on posters to this day, nobody will be seated after the first half hour of Psycho. There was a very specific reason for that. And I'm sorry I'm going to blow a major aspect of Psycho, but it came out
Turn the cameras on.
He was concerned, Hitchcock was concerned, that people were going to come in late and they were going to turn to other people and go, where's Janet Leigh? Isn't Janet Leigh in this movie? Wow. You know, because she was a major star of the time. It's like going to a Meryl Streep film and they put a cap in Meryl Streep's head in the first 10 minutes without telling anybody, you know?
Mamma Mia.
Right. Oh, God. I live in a house full of women, so I'm committed to say that I actually like Mamma Mia. Because, you know,
even the movie?
Yeah. Well, no, I only saw the film. I have a hideous weakness for movie musicals. I make no bones about it. I have a hideous weakness for movie musicals, with the sole exception of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. There's been almost no movie musical that I have not just found enjoyable in some way, shape, or form. Although I will admit, listening to Pierce Brosnan trying to sing ABBA, I did want to gnaw my leg off at the knee.
Wow. Part of the weakness, I assume.
Yeah. That was me trying to escape. But other than that...
Mamma Mia is a bear trap?
Sort of. It's an audio bear trap.
We're getting off topic or digressing, if you will.
We're certain.
My point, and I do have one, is that Hitchcock wanted to make sure that that film was enjoyed the way he meant it to be, and that the people who were seeing it weren't having their enjoyment disrupted by people going, "Where's Janet Leigh? You know, isn't she in this movie?" I would love to see people be able to enjoy X Factor the way that I intend it to be enjoyed. And if that's selfish of me, well, you know what? It's my story. I mean, I think we've all been in situations where somebody, you know, where something happened to somebody and someone says to us, oh, tell me about this. And you go, it's not my story to tell. You know? X Factor is my story to tell. And people are paying so much for comic books nowadays that I think that there's not a single person who's willing to plunk down money for the book who doesn't deserve to have the story that they're reading enjoyed to the absolute maximum effect. And with the way that the situation is now, where you get all the information out there, it becomes impossible, or at least extremely difficult. And X Factor in particular is a book that, in order to be effective, has to have the shock value. It has to. And so, yeah, I was very vague. I didn't want to say, this is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. I don't want you to know. I don't want you to know until you sit down and read the book and get to certain points and go... And, you know, if fans are anxious to see what's happening, they're anxious to know what's going to come up, I totally understand it. Totally understand that. What fans don't really seem to realize is that when I write the script, I'm anxious. I can't wait for you guys to read the book. I can't wait. I can't wait to see your reaction. I can't wait to see your responses. It's hard for me, too, because, you know, I really want to see what people are going to say. But I really feel that the best way to do that is the way that God... or myself.
You gestured to yourself.
Right, I said God or myself is really meant it to be. You guys deserve that. You guys deserve to have the story the best way that you can experience it. And so, yeah, that's why I was extremely vague. And, I mean, I can tell you right now, if I told you everything was going to be happening, people would come flocking. They'd say, oh, my God, I got to check that out. I have got to see that. Okay? So it may well cost me sales doing it this way, because people are saying I'm doing this because it's all about sales. No. If it was all about sales, I would tell you everything that's coming up, because you guys would be going, wow, I got to see that. It's all about having the story enjoyed to maximum effect. So, you know, by all means, buy the book, read the book, but do, you know, try to avoid spoilers, or as I like to call them, ruiners. Because I don't think they spoil, I think they ruin the story.
We're gonna move on.
We're going to spoil some comics.
Yes, we're going to spoil. But just a quick question before we go. What's coming up in X-Factor?
It's actually pretty exciting. When the baby's born, the baby's black. Which is a shocker for Madrox.
Yeah.
And then there's a big fight in the operating room.
Right.
And Wolverine shows up.
Now
Baby's hand gets accidentally cut off replaced with a harpoon.
Great. Haven't you used that before?
That was another generation.
Harpoon trick.
Yeah. All right, let's move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack. Woo! First thing we're going to talk about is Wolverine number 70.
Why are you handing it to me?
I don't know if you want to take a look at it.
I'll say right now, asked if I would, they said I'm welcome to talk about the various comics. I generally don't talk about comics that other people have done for the simple reason that I say stuff and it gets magnified or repeated and it's like turns, so if I say, I wasn't particular, and I'm picking one at random because they happen to show it to me. I haven't even read it yet. Is that, I wasn't that blown away by this issue of Batman. It didn't sing to me. It becomes Peter David slams Denny O'Neill. Who needs this?
That's
intense. So, to start off, Peter David was speechless at the latest issue of Wolverine.
Yeah.
What do the rest of you think about it?
I'm very much enjoying the old man Logan arc. Surprise, surprise. I think it's a cool thing to try to do with Wolverine. He's known for his claws.
Make him even grittier.
For those of you who haven't been reading it, Wolverine, this is taking Wolverine some years into the future in a post-apocalyptic wasteland of the Marvel Universe. He's traveling across the country with a blind Hawkeye trying to deliver a package.
Trying not to make it sound so dull.
I would like to say that to Mark Miller.
But I feel like it's an interesting thing to take Wolverine into the future where he won't pop his claws, where he's had enough of violence and trying to live a life where he doesn't resort to that.
What?
So it's interesting.
Someone's not current.
Yeah, kind of taking the teeth out of the character. I don't know. Nothing happens in this issue. It's so bite-sized.
What do you mean nothing happens? It's revealed why he doesn't pop his claws anymore.
Right.
That's something very important. Happened. In that book.
You realize he's sitting about 3 inches away.
Never stop me.
Indoor voice.
My ear is shut down for the 2 years we've been doing this show. No, but that's a story. So he's sitting down and telling a story. And then you cut back.
Well, that's
and
the nice
like,
thing about comics is it brings the story to life.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you.
I'm between the two of you guys, I think, because I like this. I think, Miller is doing a good job on this title. Steve McNiven's art is great.
Fantastic.
But the stories are too bite-sized at this point.
Yeah.
One thing happens per issue, and that's pretty much it. So it's reading like teeny tiny little short stories that are part of a greater whole. And I think it's going to read very well in a trade. I know you hate me saying that, but it really is.
And some of the details are interesting. There's a nice twist in this, but there's no story structure. There's no arc to it. So it's just cotton candy.
It's almost like one sentence per issue.
Yeah.
No,
and then it leaves you with some stupid cliffhanger.
No, that's ridiculous.
Like, there's at the end of this, there's a dinosaur that's part venom. And you're like, that's really scary, I guess. But it came out of nowhere, and the next issue, they'll deal with that, and then it'll be like, oh no, it's a green goblin made of rocks or something. And it's like, oh god, what are they going to do?
No, but
that's
not a bad idea. They've been setting up the dinosaur venom thing for a while. Like, first couple of stories, you saw venom on the rocks. Then you saw a couple random dinosaurs.
Yeah, that was on the rocks.
Venom on the rocks.
Yeah.
I'm Venom on the rocks with a stick.
I like mine shaken.
I don't know. This just doesn't do it.
I completely disagree with...
Would you say pick it up?
Yes.
Skip it.
I'd say pick it up. Let's move on. Talking about Final Crisis Secret Files. Finally revealing the origin of Libra.
I'll be right back. I'm going to get my water because I left it back there because I was bringing out a letter.
This is a great time.
You guys,
too.
Wow.
This
he
issue
walked
is
off. He walked off.
This is a first. This is a first.
Big
I wasn't putting the liner.
Thanks for cleaning up after yourself.
In 2009, we could afford stagehands.
Yeah. Really well-trained stagehands.
Final Crisis blows. And there's no reason to pick this up.
What an in-depth review.
Yeah.
The thing here is this character they've been setting up through this whole arc that they're saying is like a big secret character. And in this, you realize that there's no secret at all. He's just a regular guy.
It's a very typical origin story for a villain where he was abused as a kid and so he decided to become a supervillain.
Yeah.
Totally. I feel like that's what everybody falls back on if they don't have an actual origin for origin.
That's but what they call it, deficiency. Right?
Like when you find out where somebody came from, it's their origin.
Orange. Yeah.
Cool. This is boring. That being said, I do like Tony Chastain's art.
It's
very well.
It's really cool. Also, we talk a lot about the anti-life equation, which in the DC universe, it's this thing that you say to someone, and then they go crazy or evil. And in this, Grant Morrison writes a little thing about what it actually means, which doesn't really shed a lot of light on it.
To be fair, he's basically like, hey, you know all those other things you read that I didn't write? Well, it's interesting how those fit in to what I was writing because they don't.
Yeah.
And don't pay attention to them. And that's pretty much why that's there. It's a whole page about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a non-essential issue. The end. should we move on? Talking about
Man.
War Machine number one, which was actually pretty good.
Yes.
I'm
just
a
war machine.
And
I think it's Love Machine is the original.
Well, yeah.
Parody writes.
This issue is very, very mean War Machine.
Yeah.
I
like this version of War Machine. It's a meaner, more no-nonsense War Machine. I was sick and tired of the old...
To replace the previous fluffy War Machine?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to go into. Yeah,
he
the last
like,
War
he
Machine...
He's like stuffed animals and kissing booths.
Yeah,
so
you'll be like, hey guys, before I start shooting you, I feel like we should really talk things out. This one, no talking, all shooting. Which is a lot closer to my
heart. They got rid of those puppy cannons. Yeah,
yeah. Plus, you have a whole splash page here where it's just... flying body parts. That's very enjoyable. Very, very enjoyable.
See, the thing is, the character basically is the Punisher, but with guns on his shoulders as well as in his hands. To me, that's what it is.
You can see why I'm attracted to it.
Indeed. And that's why I'm not attracted to it.
But Greg Pak is an amazing writer, and it's really interesting to see him do different characters, and I feel like, you know, he can do the Hulk, he can do Incredible Hulk. He's doing Magneto right now, and sometimes when you have a lot of different projects, it's tough to really give a lot of focus, but I've yet to see one of his pieces that has been lacking. I've been enjoying all of them.
You love it.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this, and the reason I'm not crazy about this is because what they did, this is a spoiler or a runner, that
it's not my
you have James Rhodes at some point got most of his limbs and face blown off.
All of his limbs.
Yes. They've been replaced with cyborg parts.
Yeah.
Which is similar to, you know, Cyborg from the DC universe.
Right.
It just doesn't feel like it's at all necessary for the character. That being said, I think Greg Pak, it's not a plot point that he came up with, so he's doing a good job of dealing with it in this particular title. It just sort of sours me on the whole affair.
Well, wow. Very theatrical, once again. Also, it's weird, like, he lives in a satellite, and so you learn about him living in the satellite, and he has this girl up there, and she's like, you can't go back out there, your armor. He's like, I don't care, I'm going to keep going back. But there's no reason. She's not like, you're running out of power, or it's so far to the Earth. It's just like, don't do it, you can't. He's like, I have to. And then he runs out of space shooting guns.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong with this, I think Deathlok predates Cyborg.
Right.
And the $6 million man predates Deathlok.
Right.
So saying, well, he's like Cyborg, I mean, that doesn't really, you know, mean much of anything. It's a cybernetic character.
Slam.
All right.
See?
Yeah,
I'm making a simple historical note, it becomes slam.
Yeah. I'm a sensationalist.
Peter David says War Machine is a ripoff. All right, now let's move on and talk about Justice Society of America number 22, bringing to a close the 45-part Kingdom Come storyline.
Kingdom Came, I think you could say.
Was it good for you?
It was pretty good.
I'm exaggerating with the 45 parts, but it certainly felt like that. Do you think this brought it to a satisfying conclusion?
Yeah, in fact, well, not... They ripped the bad guy's head off and put it in space. So that was like, oh, okay.
You have a lot of problem with people doing stuff in space.
No, if you're on Earth, stay on Earth. If you're in space, please stay in space. That's where you are.
PSA. Public space.
Please stay in space, kids. I really liked how they kind of told the future story after Kingdom Come of Earth 22 or whatever.
I really had a problem with this arc for a while. I felt like it was really muddy and really weird, and I wasn't into it. But I was very happy with the way they ended it. So, what I
Why
say?
Why were you happy with it?
Well, I just felt like it cleaned it up nicely before.
Because it's old.
Yeah, it is old. But I just wasn't happy with any of it to begin with. But then this last issue did a better job of storytelling, a better job of saying this is the reason we made this character like this. And like before, it was just like this huge god saving people, but standing behind this river of dead people, nobody noticed. And it was just like all these different things during the previous issues that were like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm really not into this. This one I felt like was a solid issue from start to finish.
Always look at the river.
Yeah, there you go.
When you meet God.
All right, let's move on to talk about Ultimate Hulk Annual number one. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is the least essential issue of the year.
And it's early in 2009.
Yes.
To be saying that.
Dude, it's a weekend.
Yeah, well, I'll talk to you at the end of the year and see if I'm wrong.
Wow.
I will remember.
Cool. Let's meet back here.
That's a threat. That's a threat.
Basically, this is Ultimate Hulk is fighting Ultimate, what are we calling her?
Power Princess.
Yes.
That's her real name.
Yeah. And then they have sex. Spoiler.
Well, it was bound to happen because the Hulk doesn't have any pants on. Yeah. For most of the issue. That's a major plot point.
Here's how it worked. Somebody was like, what if the Hulk had no pants and then went into a diner and then fought a lady and then they did it?
Yeah.
And then
there was a lot of the joke like, sorry, sir, no shoes, no pants, no service. And yeah. Hulk was like, I want pancakes. Yeah. And the whole time I was like, really? This is what the story's about?
Now, this sounds stupid coming out of our mouths. Imagine reading it with your eyes. It's ridiculous. And what diner has a hostess stand, first off? Working in the food service industry, am I right?
Yeah. Hey,
buddy? Okay, thank you.
But yeah, then she punches him in the nuts, and then they eventually...
She punches him in the nuts twice.
Yeah. And then
she repeatedly punches him in the nuts.
What?
That's good.
Two nuts.
And Hulk's nuts, you really gotta hit. Yeah. You know?
That's weird.
They're like coconuts.
This has gotten really bad.
And then, and at the beginning,
it's hard to think that I have problems with people discussing the details of stories ahead of time.
Yeah,
this
what would
ahead
they
of time.
Spoil
the
about
already,
this?
Yeah, the book's already out, so it's not ahead of time.
Well,
this is just, it doesn't matter. It's following up on a plot point that nobody really cared about, which was Zarda from Squadron Supreme ending up in the Ultimate Universe, which was boring to begin with. Ultimate Hulk. It doesn't even seem like the same character at all as the rest of the Ultimate Universe. It feels like it's happening in no time and no place. So I don't understand what the point of this story is.
The anatomical questions also are daunting. Daunting for this issue.
Daunting, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you say pick it up?
If you go all the way through all of the comics of 2009 and get your way to the bottom, then please pick it up.
Yeah, we're going to be meeting back here. Next thing we're going to talk about is Batman Last Rights, number 684. What do you guys think about this?
This is really, really unessential, but the art's good.
Well, what happened here is they thought, hey, you know what? Batman's gone. Maybe we should answer a lot of really half-assed questions about what if Batman would be gone. Who would answer the bat signal? Yeah. Would it be Nightwing? Would it be awkward for Nightwing? Yes. Nightwing shows up and is like, hey guys, I'm nowhere near as good as Batman. Can I still help? Because you guys put out the signal.
And
it was like,
Commissioner Gordon and whoever else were there are like,
Flash.
Ugh, Nightwing.
Yeah.
Man, he's not as good as Batman.
Nightwing's like, I can hear you.
It was probably the most awkward like three or four panels there is. It was just like...
I don't understand... This is clearly a fill-in story or fill-in issue that they jury-rigged to make some kind of tie-in to Batman RIP, but it totally doesn't matter. Also, it's clear that Denny O'Neil hates Nightwing.
Yeah.
And thinks he is the stupidest character at all, you see.
Yeah.
You may be right.
Wow. See, I like Nightwing. That's why I feel bad. I mean, Batman is like in a machine somewhere in this last arc having a dream. So you don't really... That's true.
Comics.
And so there's this whole, like, who's going to take over for Batman next? And they just did that a few years ago, so it's kind of a frustrating thing across the board. And then this is just doubly frustrating.
Nice. So pick it up. Let's move on and talk about Incognito, number one, by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Sort of a deconstructionist supervillain tale. What do you guys think about this?
Well, I very much enjoy Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I feel like they really do an amazing job with storytelling, with the criminal aspect. But the problem is Criminal was so enjoyable for me, it was really hard for me not to look at this as like Criminal Part 2. Or, you know, it's supposed to be its own separate thing. I wish they would have tried to separate it a little bit more.
Well, but it's supposed to. We've already talked about this.
I know we have.
No, we have. This is all fresh. It's all very fresh.
We can have conversations.
We do have conversations.
We talk a lot about conversations.
Yeah. This is supposed to be Criminal Part 2. I mean, it's supposed to be...
Well, then why call it Incognito? That's my problem.
Yeah.
All right, booth man. I'm sorry. They talk about it in the back. They say they want it to be part of a pulp line of comics that fit in together and all kind of look very similar to each other.
Hey, Peter David, what are you doing over there?
This is fun. Oh, sorry. This is fun. I mean, it's fun. I mean, you know, I think you guys are taking this thing way too seriously.
That could be
this
said
is our life.
Dude, it's my life. It's your hobby.
All right,
I gotta go to the back.
Bring out the ladder.
No, seriously. Yeah. I earn my living. I look at these in a totally different way than you do, and I earn my living doing this stuff. And I'm reading this over, and I'm going, This issue was not meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah,
I mean it's a silly, fun story that's not meant to be taken seriously. I don't know. Maybe the art's too good because that's gorgeous art.
Art's great. Yeah.
If this thing were illustrated by Sergio Aragonés, we would not be having this problem, right?
Yeah, that's really
the art is so gorgeous that it then makes you take the story seriously, and it's not really meant to be taken seriously.
No.
It's fun. It's silly.
Yeah,
You pick that book up. You read it, you're going to be laughing. Is everything they're saying correct in terms of the dynamics of exactly what happens? Yeah, absolutely. Everything you said is absolutely true. But it's funny. It's a funny story. It's a silly story. It's you know, I really can't say anything more about it than that. It's just something you just can't get that worked up over. I mean, you guys
what about
so
the diner? There's a hostess.
So what?
The diner has a hostess.
Yeah. There's a wonderful diner, and I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Oh, well, you can talk about diners all day long, but you can't
review it. There's a great diner in New Jersey called Mastori's, right off of Exit 6. They have fantastic baked goods. They're in Bordentown. You go in there, yeah, they have a hostess.
Now that I think of it, maybe this takes place there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Could be.
Pick it up.
M-A-S-T-O-R-I-S, Mastori's in Bordentown. Check out the baked goods. The cheese bread is fantastic.
Got to love the baked goods.
Cool. I agree with you that it can be silly, but I don't think it's silly in a way that it's not as funny to me. Like
now, that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay,
humor. I totally understand that. That's totally reasonable. Humor is incredibly subjective. Incredibly, humor is much harder than drama. Much harder because everybody finds, by and large, the same things to be very serious and very difficult. Humor is so different to different people. I found that funny. You didn't. I totally get that. Totally.
The Battle of the Peets, is that an end?
Last but not least, we're going to talk about X-Force number 10. This has been one of our favorite titles. What do you guys think about this issue?
This is awesome. It's fantastic. It's high octane. It's Wolverine cutting stuff up. Ghost Rider shows up and it's cool instead of lame. It's great.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is there is a lot happening in this comic. Instead of dealing with maybe two storylines, there's three or four going on here. And a lot of times when you have different storylines going on in one comic, I get upset where I was like, oh, I really want to know more about what's happening in this story. I'm more into this story than the other stories. I really like this character more. But they do a really great job of setting up characters and having them be likable in certain different ways. But you're into all the different storylines. It's very impressive.
Kyle and Yoss are going to be, they're going to break through in 2009.
They do an incredible job with this. Oh, that's very nice. They do an incredible job.
Thank you for taking a moment and honoring.
I just wanted to take a moment and tell you guys that I like Justin.
Finally.
Cool.
Absolutely. But I just want to clarify something.
Yeah.
When I said before, and seriously, comic books are your hobby, they're my life. Mm-hmm. By that I mean, quite simply, if comic books went away tomorrow, it's not impossible. If Diamond Comics folded, you have a problem, right?
Yeah.
But if comic books went away tomorrow, you guys would find another hobby.
I'd go back to medicine.
Yeah. We'd have a show called Club here every Tuesday night.
If comic books went away tomorrow, I'd be in deep trouble. You know, so...
Dude, we should pass a jar out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's happening tomorrow. No more comic books.
Cool.
Oh, the Scarlet Witch is going to whisper no more comic books to another. That was a really inside joke. I mean, nerdy thing to say.
And that's no more the stack. Yeah. It is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because it's the section you guys make up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to bring out James.
James!
I did mess up before, so.
Yeah, they were definitely reacting to that.
Yeah. All right, so I got a bunch of questions.
They're awfully tiny questions.
Okay.
Conservation, Mr. David.
That makes sense.
All right.
Hey, James.
One of the best questions I ever heard was when somebody at San Diego, they had the director of Daredevil up there, and I have a question. Daredevil, what the hell? So I thought that was going to be like, X Factor, what the hell?
Every question.
Yeah.
All right. If you could undo one comic of 2008, what would it be?
Wow.
If I could undo...
Yeah, like hit the reset button, I guess, or take it away.
Jesus.
That is a tough question.
I would take away the crises, the final crises, the medium crises, the almost maybe there should
not
be...
Not the medium crises.
If I could undo one comic, I would probably undo the Return of Uncle Ben story that I did in Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. I don't think it worked. I mean, it was something I tried, and it didn't work as well as I wanted it to. So I would probably undo that. Was that in 2008?
Sure.
Maybe.
So.
That was
a
while.
Yeah.
And it's no fault of the artist. I mean, it's just I didn't execute. You know, I had an idea for the story, and it didn't work. It did not work as well as I wanted it to.
Now, how hard is that for you to? Is that kind of like one of those things when it happens, you're like, oh well, I'm gonna work on the next one, or is it kind of stay with you a little bit and you're like, why didn't that work?
You try and learn from it. Look, writing is like any other job. It's like any other job. People try and romanticize it or mystify it or elevate it. It's not. It's a constant learning process. And you learn from your mistakes. And there are certain elements, and I won't go into detail for no other reason than we don't have a whole heck of a lot of time, but there are certain elements in it that just didn't work. And I was not satisfied with the final, you know, with the final product. And so it's kind of like, you know, okay, memo to me, that doesn't work. Don't do that again. That kind of thing. I think it was actually not 2008, but.
Yeah. If someone came up to you and was like, oh, I really like that,
I'd say thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm a genius.
If you ask that question, raise your hand.
Oh, yeah.
Pete's going to bring you a special prize.
Nice.
Let's get the next question.
This is for you specifically, Peter. Is it difficult for you to write She-Hulk with a feminine sensibility?
Why no? I have four daughters. I've had four daughters and two wives. The wives sequentially. I think I know about as much about women as any guy can purport to know. So, no, I don't think I have trouble. Now, women may disagree. I don't know. But I like to think that my take on She-Hulk is true to the way a woman would think.
There you go.
Being so familiar with women, do you have problems writing male characters?
You lost the masculine.
I do have some personal experience with being a guy.
Oh.
So, you know, look, you write what you know. I mean, it's the truism of writing. Write what you know. I do have some familiarity with the way guys work. I mean, the bottom line is that any writer is a student of humanity. You watch what people do, you watch what they think, you think, why do people do this? Why do they act in such a way? You try and analyze, you know, from every possible aspect. When I read the newspaper, other people read the newspaper to find out what's going on. I read the newspaper to see why people do things, to try and figure out why people are acting in such a way. Whatever their actions be, positive or negative. And then you try to apply that to writing.
You're talking about like Marmaduke and Michael Bailey?
I actually kind of meant the news section, but okay.
Well, I only read one section of the paper.
The Marmaduke section? Raise your hand if you ask a question. Pete's going to bring you a gift. One more question.
What is your favorite pun you've ever worked into a comic book?
My favorite pun? Oh, God. Wow. No idea.
That is
I have no idea what my favorite pun is. I know my favorite joke that didn't get into a comic book.
All right. Oh.
Which
better, even
close.
Better.
That's fine.
There was an issue of Spider-Man many years ago in which he finds a baby abandoned in an alleyway, and he brings the baby to a hospital. And I had the nurse say, "Wait a minute, this baby, are you the father?" And what I dialogued Spider-Man saying was, "Gee, I don't know. Let's throw him against the wall and see if he sticks." And they said no. My favorite concept that I ever came up with that was unused is when they were looking for ideas, they put in an APB for ideas for the gag What If they did about a year or two ago, and I came up with what I thought was the greatest Marvel gag What If ever. What if Black Bolt had Tourette's? They didn't want to use that one. Aww. Which I think is a prime show.
Not a lot of story to tell there.
Basically, one paddle story.
Yeah. How many do you really need?
Didn't read that.
True professional.
Cool. Raise your hand if you ask a question. Pete will bring a gift. And thank you, James. Woo!
Yeah.
All right. It is time for our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek. Yeah. Don't tell anybody though. Since we've been away for a little while, we decided to forgo the week part and instead talk about the year to come. Things that you're excited about in 2009 that you're looking forward to, obviously, in comics. Anything that Pete jumped to mind?
Well, I'm nervous. I'm hoping that this year is going to continue to be comics in the spotlight. It's very exciting to be a comic book fan and happen to be such a part of regular conversation like it's never been before. So I'm hoping that that continues. But obviously I'm really looking forward to Wolverine and the next Punisher movie, which I hope will be made.
Wow.
It only takes them an afternoon to shoot them.
Yeah. To write them. I'm looking forward to, there's going to be a big Aquaman rebirth thing coming this year, supposedly. So I'm excited about that.
Again, that trick never works.
Yeah. So we'll see, because they kind of screwed him up after.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to new Scott Pilgrim this year.
Yeah,
very exciting. And the exciting news about that is we're going to have Brian Lee O'Malley on the show the night that the new Scott Pilgrim is coming out.
Whoa.
So that should be pretty exciting.
He may hold a copy of it in his hand.
Yeah, and I might go backstage and read it and not talk to you guys.
No problem.
Also, I'm pretty excited about New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
Coming up in like less than a month now, right?
Yeah, it's right after.
First weekend of February, 5th, 6th, 7th.
Yeah.
Or 6th, 7th, 8th, whichever. It's the first
week. We're going to be there the whole time doing interviews and stuff.
Yeah, so that's
I'll be
maybe
there.
We'll see
I will
then.
Be there Friday and Sunday.
Maybe we'll see you and talk to you then.
Maybe.
That's a promise, right?
Well, no, I'm just talking about it, like schedules is hook up.
Right. We're gonna hook up.
Okay. What I'm looking forward to. I'm actually looking forward to Dark Tower. Not that I have a personal stake in it.
Yeah.
But so many people are reading Dark Tower, and so many people are loving it, and just. It's been such a joy working with Robin Firth and Jay Lee and Richard Easenhoff. I mean, just when the books come out, I look forward the most to seeing that, because if for no other reason than that, the final, I just see the pencils. The final art is just so fantastic. It's just so gorgeous.
And it almost feels like Dark Tower at Marvel is its own little bubble cottage industry right now going on. With
well, Stephen King, certainly. We got that. And we got The Stand, yeah. And I also have to say, jumping to the other side of the fence, I'm looking forward to Watchmen. To the Watchmen film, presuming it comes out. I think that could just be absolutely fantastic. I was out at the San Diego Comic Con and I saw the model that they had, the actual of the owl ship.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh my God, I mean, I was looking into the owl ship and I don't know how much of it's going to be visible on screen, but it looked like it came right out of the pages. And I mean, it's just amazing to me. I mean, because you got to understand, when I was growing up, when I was a young comic book fan, you know, what were we getting? We were getting the campy Adam West Batman, and in the 70s we had the Justice League special. Spider-Man had a big honking belt around him, and like
bunch of clones.
And no, I was talking about the TV show.
Oh, I know.
Oh, the clones, right? Yeah, the clones. Yeah.
Weird clone episode.
The Hulk didn't. You know, the Hulk was like a guy in green body makeup. There was Wonder Woman, the one Oasis, but other than that, and Hollywood made changes willy-nilly wherever they felt, does Thor have to be a god, and Daredevil, he can't have horns on his head, people think it's satanic. I mean,
They made, for the Incredible Hulk, they made him David Banner, because Bruce was...
Because they thought Bruce was too gay a name.
Yeah, I was like,
news
really?
To Bruce Springsteen, I have to think.
Well, they made him gay then, too. And that's a little known.
And then now
Ghost of Tom Joad is all about that.
And now we have comic book stories movies that are such fealty that they look like they came right off the pages. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Cool. 2009. What a year! And that's it for the Week in Geek.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. It is time for our next section, which is trivia, and for that we're going to turn it over to.
He's having
everything's
fun.
Fine.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to literally.
I have no freaking idea what's going on back there.
A lot of pictures of you.
Yeah. Thank God.
Pete, take it over. Pete. Trivia.
Yeah, all right. Nice work, Shane.
That's one person applause, being Pete.
Yeah.
No applause for me, so I applaud for myself.
Pete applause.
Well, this was the section where we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you very much for showing up. This is an opportunity for you to win $25 free. No, just $25.
Oh, okay.
It's tough times.
Yeah.
$25 free in the form of a gift certificate to Midtown Comics. Who would like $25 free? Simply raise your hand. $25 free. Yes, you.
Woo!
The shy kind of, hey, maybe me. Come on down, sir. Let's
Woo!
Do this.
How you can see them, I have absolutely no clue.
What's your name?
Alex.
Audience?
Yeah.
Audience Alex.
Woo!
Yeah. So, here, just stand right over here. How this is going to work.
Do we have any Justins in the audience so we can have a pair of each on stage?
A pair.
How this is going to work.
Justin's a very unique name.
Is we're going to read you three questions. You're going to listen to each question and then listen to three possible answers. If you choose the correct one, get all three right, that gift card will be yours. So today's trivia is on X Factor for no particular reason. Here we go. The 1991 X Factor used what as their home base? Is it A, Tribeca in New York, B, the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., or C, the Keebler Elf Tree? So it is either A or it is B. Oh my God! Woo! You were nervous. Here we go. In 2002, X Factor was released in a limited series, and it focused on A, the Mutant Civil Rights Task Force, B, the Mutant Population Revival Task Force, or C, Mutants for a Better Tofu Product Task Force. So it's either A, or it could be B. A is correct! Wow! Wow! Here we go. Last one. No help. Okay.
toughest trivia in 2009.
In the more present X Factor, X Factor is more of a police department, B, detective agency, or C, nannies for hire. If you can find them, they will sit. Sorry, it was more enjoyable for me. So it's either a police department, which, I mean, that doesn't kind of make any sense, really, or it's B. Oh my God! Congratulations! $25 is yours, Alex.
All right. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking for?
No, that's on purpose. That's
okay. Pete, what are you looking for?
No, that was a mistake.
I'm going to say Jonah Hex. I'm always pleasantly surprised. You don't like when I spit on you? Okay. Sorry, I won't do that.
So yeah, weird. Whatever. You're so weird.
We're
Justin.
All friends.
Yeah, Jonah Hex is just... it's very impressive because it's always a one-shot, but every time I'm not bored with it, it continues to be great.
It's been good. I am looking forward to Faces of Evil Grundy, Solomon Grundy, one of my favorite villains. He's getting a one-shot.
Cool. I'm going to say Authority number 6. I've been really enjoying the reboot of this title by Abnett and Lanning. I think they've been doing a great, great job. Really kicking it out and bringing it back to the Authority to what it should be, a big budget superhero movie in comic book form. Doing great.
I'm going to be there for Gru Hell on Earth trade paperback.
Sergio.
And what do you have coming up that we should be looking forward to?
This week? Absolutely nothing.
In general.
Well, let's see. The paperback version of my novel Tiger Heart, which is a Peter Pan pastiche, will be coming out this year. I had a book last year that came out that it's actually overlooked by pretty much all the adults because it's a YA called Mascot to the Rescue, about a young fan who's completely obsessed with a comic book sidekick. So, you know, that's entertaining. You know the various comic book projects I have. The only other thing that I have that's kind of off the beaten path, I have some other projects I can't really discuss because it's a little bit too early. I also wrote an episode of the animated TV series Ben 10.
Cool!
Ben 10.
Yeah,
usually we talk about Ben 10 on the show.
Yeah, it's not like we did. Ben 10 is what our profession, and to other people it's a hobby.
A what?
Ben 10.
Is what?
It's a profession to us, and to other people it's a hobby.
It's a hobby, there you go. Dwayne McDuffie, who's the story editor, I'm sure you all know Dwayne, brought me in to write an episode for next season, and it was a heck of a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, today's the 6th, they recorded it, so, you know, 18.
Yeah.
And it was really cool because I got my 6-year-old into it. She's totally into Ben 10, and when I was at Cartoon Network, they had a life-size statue of Ben 10, so I had pictures of me taken with my arm draped around Ben 10 going like this, and then send him to my daughter saying, see, look, Daddy met Ben 10.
Awesome. Well, cool. Look forward to all of that. Also, you can look forward to next week. We are going to have David Gallagher and Steve Ellis on the show, creators of High Moon. They're going to be kicking off the new season of that series. And also, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of people want to thank. We want to thank Peter Dan for being here. You guys are here every single week, every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thank you both.
Good night, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming out to the video. This time.